what was happening in Parkersburg, West Virginia, was also happening in Fayetteville at the same exact time. And it's the fact that this just shows the depravity of industry, especially a company like Chemours, that knew. You can't tell me that those, that at the high level business decision, the C-level boardroom meetings, they did not know that what was happening in Parkersburg was equally happening in Fayetteville. I don't believe that. And there was actually, I think there was some court documents when Chemours sued DuPont. It revealed some allegations that DuPont, in fact, did know and chose not to do anything.
Welcome to the Environmental Transformation Podcast, where we talk with industry leaders, climate champions, and sustainability professionals who are making an impact in their businesses today. Each leader is solving complex challenges and providing solutions within their respective areas of expertise. And here's our host, Sean Grady.
Hello, ET Nation. I'm excited to announce that I've updated my website that provides listeners more access to episode content and information about the podcast. Please take a moment and visit the website and sign up for email notifications and blog postings. Also, check out our sponsors page to see who supports the show. We can't thank these industry leaders enough. Finally, I would really appreciate if you would take a moment and post a review and rate the podcast episodes either from my website or from within your podcast app. This helps the podcast get more exposure on Apple Podcasts and other podcast networks. Also, please send me comments and recommendations on topics that you want to hear about. I hope you enjoy the new website, so check it out at www.seankgrady.com.
Welcome to the Environmental Transformation Podcast. I'm your host, Sean Grady. Today's guest is Emily Donovan. Emily is the co-founder of Clean Cape Fear. We're bringing you back on the show. This is, I think, might be your third time on the show now, I believe. This is an impressive feat. I think that's the first time for anybody. So congrats on that.
Thank you. It's so good to be here.
Yeah, thank you for coming back. We're going to talk a little bit about an update of what you've really been working on with the Clean Cape Fear initiatives. The last time you were on the show, there was a conversation that we had toward the end of the interview around you guys were putting together a petition to submit to the United Nations regarding human rights violations associated with PFAS chemical releases into the Cape Fear River watershed against DuPont and Chemours. And I know there's some updates, so I was hoping maybe you could provide some update information on what happened and what's going on there. And then maybe also for the listeners who don't know about Cape Fear, talk a little bit about that too, just because maybe they didn't listen to the other two episodes that they should have already by now.
Absolutely. Yeah. So just to give a little background information. So I live right outside of Wilmington, North Carolina. We are one of the last urban stops along the Cape Fear River before it lets out into the Atlantic Ocean. And we learned 6 years ago that DuPont and Chemours had for decades been dumping large quantities of PFAS, including the chemical Gen X, into the Cape Fear River, which was the primary source for our drinking water. Uh-huh. This is how Clean Cape Fear formed. And so what we've been doing is spending just a lot of volunteer time working to hold Chemours accountable, but also hold our elected leaders accountable and to get the necessary changes that we need made to make sure that this just doesn't happen again. And so things that we focus on is stopping PFAS exposures, all exposures to PFAS, knowing the health risks. That's the one thing that's been really difficult for us is to, we know we were exposed, that's well documented, but what does that mean when we go to a doctor's office? And so we've been fighting to get health studies for our region and then also making polluters pay. And so that's in a nutshell what we focus on. And then just to dive into it, last year we petition, for lack of a better word, we call it a petition, but the official term, the official UNE's term is communication. And so we drafted a communication by partnering with the University of Berkeley's Environmental Law Clinic. Uh-huh. And we submitted this communication to the United Nations Special Rapporteur of Human Rights and seeking redress for violations that we feel were occurring in the region based off of the history of contamination. This action was really the catalyst, for this action was that Chemours had announced 6 months prior that they wanted to expand. And we just were gut-wrenched when we heard that. So we still have residents that do not have clean drinking water. We still do not understand the full scope of contamination coming from this facility. And now they want to expand and make more PFAS in this area. We just felt that was unconscionable. And so that's why we chose to reach out to the United Nations, is because we feel like this is just beyond the United States' ability to wrap its head around. And so we drafted the communication and we submitted it in April of last year, which I think was about the time that, we talked about
this.
And the United Nations ended up taking up the communication. So the first step is to just see if they'll even approve it and look into it and investigate it. And so we cleared that first hurdle, which is they said, yeah, we'll investigate this. We think this is a really important communication and a potential violation. So let's look into it. And so the special rapporteur did some investigating and they sent letters of allegation. They sent six letters to three companies and two nations. So a letter went out to the United States, one went out to the Netherlands, and then three letters went out to the corporations that are attached to the Fayetteville Works facility, which Chemours owns that right now, but DuPont used to own it. And Corteva is another business entity. And the reason why those three companies were looped in is because for those who are interested in kind of corporate shell games, what's been playing out is DuPont over the last couple of years has been engaged in this corporate shell game of hiding all of their assets and putting all of their liabilities in one area, hiding all of their assets in another, so that when the liabilities become too much in the legal system, they can hide all those billions of dollars away from settlements. And so that has been playing out in the court system right now. And so when the UN sent the letters, they identified DuPont, New DuPont, Corteva, and Chemours. So the letters of allegation were sent, and then there was a 60-day waiting period before those letters could be made public to anyone. And while that 60-day waiting period, it was just an opportunity for the recipients of the letters to respond. And any responses received by the UN would then be posted as well. And so everything got posted all at the same time. So around Thanksgiving, We received notification that everything was posted and publicly available. And so we were able to see the letters that the UN wrote. We were able to then see the responses that were given. And so Chemours, Corteva, and DuPont each submitted response letters. And all I can say is for the amount of money these corporations have and the legal teams that they employ, they certainly weren't talking to each other, because the letters are kind of very interesting, a little comical. It's like the Scooby who did it. Oh, you did it. No, you did it. No, you did it.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. I didn't understand that. That's, or know of that part of the story. That's interesting, because sounds like the right hand wasn't, they weren't coordinated, right? The right hand wasn't talking to the left as far as a coordinated response.
No, there wasn't. You had Chemours saying, here's, this is who we are today, but that was not, but we don't know what you're talking about before 20, before we incorporated or we
started. Yeah, because we never existed before then. That was DuPont.
And then DuPont says, that's not us. We're new DuPont. We don't know who you're talking about. That company no
longer. Golly, really?
And then you have Corteva going, we've never been in this business. No, thank you. Please leave us alone. And the thing is, Corteva, if you go and look at some of the corporate shell games that are playing out and you read some of those verdicts and look at some of the press surrounding that, you'll see that Corteva is attached from a financial standpoint. But if you go back and read the documents from the court filings with the corporate shell game happening, you'll see that there's been some maneuvering. And so there is some liability that Corteva would be attached to. Another thing that we thought was interesting is that the Netherlands did respond. And the Netherlands were really called out for their waste shipments. The Netherlands had approved Genex waste to be shipped from the Chemours facility in the Netherlands to the North Carolina facility. And while Chemours says that that doing this is a recycling program, we saw some really interesting reportings, particularly from Lisa Sorg at NC Newsline, and then also Pat Rizzotto from Bloomberg Law. they did some fantastic reporting on this topic and were able to investigate that Chemours is recycling at most like less than 40% or less than 45% of the material, and the rest is going to be disposed. That is not nearly a recycling program in my mind. That is a waste generator with a little bit of recycling happening on the side, which draws into question whether international laws are being broken as far as shipping waste.
ET Nation, thanks for tuning in. We'll be right back after this message. This episode is sponsored by Zappa Stewart, the leading provider of superabsorbent polymer technology in the power, dredging, oil and gas, and remediation sectors for over 20 years. When a reliable, fast, and cost-effective liquid waste solidification solution is needed, customers count on the ZappaZorb brand of SAPs and Zappa Stewart's technical expertise to ensure a smooth and successful project. When liquid waste needs to be out of sight and out of mind, solidify with ZappaZorb SAPs. To learn more about Zappa Stewart and the super absorbent polymers they offer, visit their website at www.chasecorp.com/Zappa-Stewart.
So the facility, Chemours facility in the Netherlands, is sending their waste, their Gen X waste, to Cape Fear, Fayetteville site to be reprocessed a bit, maybe extract something out of it. And then what's happening with the rest of the waste?
The rest of the waste gets disposed of, all of the other waste from the facility. So just a bit, and to back up a bit, the Fayetteville Works facility still does not have a discharge permit for its processes, for its process waste streams. So this company was never shut down. When we learned about Gen X and the river, there was never efforts made to shut production down. Production was allowed to continue. The efforts were made to get to clean up the discharges. And the problem is that they found out Chemours couldn't do it. And so the solution at the time was to have Chemours divert their PFAS, divert all of the process waste stream into these tanker trucks. And those tanker trucks got shipped to Deer Park, Texas for deep well injection.
Okay.
And then you can also go look at EPA databases and see, and I think there's also been some reporting that some of this waste also goes to other areas. I think incineration in the past has been documented, but there's also been issues of just more disposal and whatever that disposal mechanism would be. So we know there's a couple of other locations along the East Coast where there's been some disposal of this. What is happening currently, that would have to be updated through reporting, because the most current reporting that I have seen is that it's deep well injection to Deer Park, Texas.
Yeah.
So while there's a little bit of recycling happening with that international waste from the Netherlands, the vast majority of it, though, is still for disposal. And so there's a huge concern that the Netherlands recognizes this waste as hazardous. And in fact, one of the reasons why we believe it's being shipped to the United States is because the Netherlands facility is finding it increasingly difficult to find locations within Europe that's willing to take this. They used to send it to Veneto, Italy, and to a recycling center, and that recycling center went out of business. And there's huge contamination in that region related to PFAS. There's an incineration facility that Chemours used to use in Belgium, and there's also massive contamination around that site. And the Belgian government has said, no, I'm so sorry, we're not taking this anymore. It's just too dangerous to process this. So Chemours is coming up with increasingly less opportunities to figure out how to dispose of this. In my mind, when you have a problem of that magnitude, you don't keep trying to find nations that'll take your waste. Maybe you need to get out of the business of making this waste to begin with.
That could be good. That might be the best solution, but I think there are probably challenges. What's the alternative and how fast can we produce an alternative? And yeah, I don't know from a business perspective, but it doesn't seem right to be shipping all that waste over here and letting our country be the dumping ground for their waste and that they're producing in another country. Yeah, I'm not a big fan of that.
Yeah. And then we have to understand too that there is obviously it's in their best interest to make the claim that their products are essential and can't be replaced. But we are finding that is becoming less of a talking point than I think everyone was willing to allow. And we are seeing all of the areas where, not all of the areas, but we're seeing increasing areas where that's being challenged. And the EU has been actually working to phase out the use and dependency of PFAS. And so they've been going through the process of saying, what is an essential use? And if there is an essential use, then you're going to have a couple, you're going to have years to figure out how to find a replacement for that. But the goal is to eventually phase this all out. It's possible. We are the birthplace of innovation here in the United States. So I challenge Chemours, quit telling us that we can't live without this chemistry, and show us, if you really are the great chemist that you say you are, that you can find a safer, greener chemistry alternative.
Great point, Emily. Great point. That's a good point. So that's some of the big things that are happening with the responses from the UN complaints, right? So...
the next part of the process is the letters were written, but the United Nations still had not publicly said anything. It just started the investigation. And so the real big news came this past February when the United Nations issued an official press statement where they took a stand, and they basically condemned these companies and said that they had generated extensive contamination in North Carolina, and that regulators in the United States needed to clamp down and really hold these companies accountable for business-related human rights abuses that had been going on for decades. And so that was incredibly validating. And we've just been using that to continue to pressure the EPA and to pressure regulators in North Carolina to recognize that when they don't act on behalf of residents in our community, that they are enabling business-related human rights violations.
I just watched a little news clip on the internet before our call, and I guess the local environmental department sending out notice letters to all residents that have drinking water wells on there that's saying, hey, you've been exposed. We're here to help you put in drinking water filtration systems on your well. And I was like, wow, okay, that's good. But it sounds like the pressure is really ramping up and some actions happening because I think the guy said, I didn't have any results that detected PFAS before, but now I'm getting a letter saying I do have it and I need to put in a filtration system. So I was like,
That is part of an action from last year where DEQ expanded the consent agreement under Chemours, and they opened it up. For a while, the legal agreement forced Chemours to only sample private wells around the facility. Uh-huh. But because the contamination had occurred with these downstream, we live 80 miles away from Chemours. Our primary drinking water in our communities are all public utilities that got their water from the Cape Fear River. But you have to understand that that contaminated tap water has been put in irrigation systems. And it's been used to irrigate crops, to people's yards, to irrigate golf courses, but then also when you're flushing a fire hydrant, so you're just expelling all of that water. I think one of the local utilities had an underground aquifer that they were reserving that got contaminated because they were using contaminated tap water and didn't know it. So it raised the question of what about private wells and private groundwater for the communities in this area that are 80 miles away from this facility? And that became an issue. And they did find Chemours-specific PFAS from this facility in private wells. So they expanded that program. And so that started last year. But can you imagine being a private well owner and you see all of this in the news and you think, oh, I'm good because I live on a private well? It's those people who live on a public water supply that are at risk. And then 5 years later, get a letter going, wait a second, you might also have contaminated tap water. You should probably check. It has been a really hard struggle. No one is happy.
I can only imagine. I still am amazed, and I'll go back to this talking about dark waters. I'm still amazed by how many people in the environmental industry in general who have not seen that movie yet. I am just really, truly flabbergasted by the fact that it's probably the most documentary, docudrama, so to speak, that really speaks to what's really going on and what has happened. And this is like a recreation of that in Cape Fear, in a way, in a lot of ways. It's not exact, but it's darn close, right? It's very similar in a lot of ways. And how many times is this happening in other communities, just like Parkersburg? And it's just depressing when you think about it, because there's not much that's happening fast enough to fix things, it seems.
I think you bring up such a good point, because with dark waters, what was happening is that what was happening in Parkersburg, West Virginia, was also happening in Fayetteville at the same exact time. And it's the fact that this just shows the depravity of industry, especially a company like Chemours that knew. You can't tell me that at the high level business decision, the C-level boardroom meetings, they did not know that what was happening in Parkersburg was equally happening in Fayetteville. I don't believe that. And there was actually, I think there was some court documents when Chemours sued DuPont. It revealed some allegations that DuPont, in fact, did know and chose not to do anything.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Environmental Transformation Podcast. We'll be right back after this message. Today's podcast is sponsored by Cascade Environmental, the only field services contractor with the experts and equipment to support you from project conception to completion, even when it comes to PFAS contamination. Their field personnel are experienced in the stringent protocols required for PFAS-related drilling. Their proprietary Waterloo app system can support the most complete delineation of PFAS contamination in soils and groundwater. And now their thermal team is preparing for their first field demonstration of thermal PFAS treatment. If you'd like to learn more about Cascade's PFAS delineation and remediation capabilities, contact them at www.cascade-env.com. That's www.cascade-env.com.
But I love that you brought up dark waters, because Mark Ruffalo is the real deal. We have had the privilege of, or I've had the privilege of meeting and working with Mark Ruffalo now for 4 years now? Because I met him in 2019. And he is committed to this topic. And he portrayed Rob a lot. And you make a good point that it feels like things just aren't moving quickly. And I can't imagine what it must feel like for Rob, who discovered this. He unearthed the biggest contamination crisis in the globe, if you think about it, when he discovers PFOA and alerts the world. And while we think that not a lot has happened, it's pretty amazing, though, where we've come from that. If it wasn't for him and if it wasn't for Mr. Tennant, the farmer, who said, I want to know, and put his life on the line and his farm on the line.
On the line, too.
Yeah.
His wife died. Yeah, you're right. And to see what Rob Ballot has done to basically take up the cause of the common man, so to speak, against a corporate giant like these guys, and to discover that, I recommend anybody that's listening to this podcast to go back and listen to the interview I did with Rob Ballot about this exact topic in dark waters. It's probably the best, most influential interview I've done, in addition to Emily's here, of course. But no, it's fantastic. And it really speaks to the real essence of what's going on with the PFAS. I'll call it the PFAS pandemic, so to speak. It's that bad of an issue, really. It's just still not really fully defined.
But yes. And I think what I want to point out is there's hope on the horizon. And one thing that I am excited about is what we've been able to see the EPA do. Granted, I would love to see the EPA move faster. And we all want that. We want to see it. We want to see things just move faster than they should. And what I think I've come to realize is that it's easier to break things. It's a lot harder to fix them. And so that's the struggle, is that if administrations are constantly breaking things, then when the next administration comes in and tries to fix it, they can't fix it at the speed that you're able to break something at. Regardless, last year, the head of the EPA administrator, Michael Regan, came to Wilmington, and I had the distinct honor and privilege of introducing him to Wilmington for the announcement where he's proposing drinking water standards, first ever drinking water standards for PFAS, for six PFAS, PFOA, PFOS, and then four PFAS that'll be listed as a hazard index. That includes Gen X. If we really think about it and look back, it's taken Rob Balot has struggled to get drinking water standards for these chemicals issued. He struggled to get any sort of regulation. And I'm only here today because we've been able to stand on the shoulders of his work. And he's been tireless in his efforts to make sure that the nation is aware of this problem. And now there's enough support and enough momentum that's been built that we're able to get Gen X drinking water standards after learning about Gen X 6 years ago, to have them proposed last year is massive.
Yeah.
And now we're in this waiting period. And in fact, just this past February, I went to DC and got to meet back up with Mark Ruffalo again. And we hung out and we did a big push to just keep pressuring the EPA, keep pressuring the White House and keep pressuring Congress to make sure that these drinking water standards get passed. It is critical for public health.
Yeah.
These chemicals cause cancer. I mean, it's in my mind, I 100% believe a lot of the sicknesses and illnesses that we have seen in our community and in other communities like ours across the country. I wonder what would have happened if those chemicals hadn't have been in the water, if the illnesses would not be there. And so, you know what? Let's find out. We have such a golden opportunity to get this stuff out of our water. And then let's see what the health of our communities can start looking like.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that would be fantastic. And if we get Mark Ruffalo on the show, anything you can pull some strings there, bring him on. I'd love to have him come on. That'd be fantastic. But the EPA has done a lot of good work on getting these new proposed rules. I think they also just recently proposed to change the definition of hazardous waste to include PFAS as hazardous waste or what hazardous constituents in the record corrective action rule under corrective action. So that's going to have an impact on the waste industry a little bit down the road here. That's going to be interesting to see how that plays out with the new definitions they're proposing as well. So what do you think could have effect on what's going on?
Yeah. Earlier we were talking about those Gen X waste shipments. And so close the loop on that conversation. So right now, currently the EPA has stopped Chemours from being able to ship its Gen X waste from the Netherlands to the United States.
Okay.
However, in the public statement, when the EPA denied the application, they denied it on a formality. They said there was just an inaccuracy in the calculations that Chemours had sent. That's not a very satisfying answer for our community. It's just saying, oh, Chemours, can you please redo your application?
Yeah, technicality here instead of we don't agree with you sending hazardous waste back to the U.S. to be disposed in our backyard. Yeah.
Because other countries won't take it. And so one thing that would be really helpful is that in part of what the EPA said, like when the EPA said it said that it can't deny these shipments because it doesn't recognize PFAS as hazardous waste. And that is such a glaring loophole. And so it's almost like the EPA has a problem and is perpetuating this problem and then openly admits, oh, we can't stop the shipments because they're not designated as hazardous waste. Guess who designates things as hazardous waste? You do, EPA.
That's right. Fix it.
Yeah. So it is helpful that we are seeing them start that process. And so that's what's happened recently. What we would like to see and what we want people to advocate for is that they designate all PFAS as a class. Right now, the designation is 9 PFAS. This is 9 forever chemicals in a category.
Like, there's 6,000 or 8,000 of those darn things.
You've got 15,000 PFAS. Let's not wait and do them one at a time. Let's do this as a class. They walk like a duck, talk like a duck, act like a duck. Let's treat them all like ducks and get them regulated. So it's a good step in the right direction. Of course, it's a painstakingly slow process, but again, we just have to stick with it because that's the process.
So have you seen any movement? The Biden infrastructure bill's been out there a bit now. Have you seen any movement in any improvements in the infrastructure in and around Cape Fear for drinking water facilities, things like that, wastewater facilities, anything to help treat and process this?
So we'll say that the infrastructure bill, I think, is a phenomenal bill that has really, it's putting billions of dollars in federal funding to states that need to make infrastructure improvements to be able to filter out and treat their water and remove water and remove PFAS from people's tap water. In our region, we had to go it alone. And so we didn't wait. When Wilmington learned about Gen X and the tap water, Wilmington didn't wait for the federal government to create a drinking water standard. Wilmington went ahead and said, we need to upgrade. And so they invested $43 million to upgrade their treatment process. Unfortunately, that burden has fallen on the ratepayer. Same in my community. I live in a different water district. I'm in a suburb of Wilmington. And in my water district, they had to spend $100 million, a little over $100 million in upgrades to make improvements that could treat PFAS. So these are expensive processes. But in our situation, we know who the polluter is. So there's litigation right now against Chemours. And I'm not expecting infrastructure money to come to our region because we would rather the polluter pay. That infrastructure money really should be there for the communities that maybe have PFAS problems, but they don't know where the source is coming from. So there really isn't a polluter they can hold accountable. These might be communities where it was the local fire station that used AFFF for decades and contaminated the groundwater. And that is a municipal government. So the municipal government's going to have to take care of itself. Really fantastic work that was done to get that money available so that when these drinking water standards, if and when they are approved, which we hope is soon, that communities aren't left saying, how do I pay for it? There's buckets of money available to help communities pay for it. There's ongoing litigation that's happening all over the country to make sure that these PFAS manufacturers, because there's only in the world, there's only 12 PFAS manufacturers. So the ones that are accountable in the United States, those are the ones that should be paying for the upgrades for communities. Yeah. We do know it came from a Chemours, it came from a Solvay, it came from a Dynacan.
And we'll be right back after this brief message from our sponsor. Did you know E-Tank is the only environmental rental equipment company in the industry that offers a 100% certified clean guarantee at no additional cost? Well, this gives customers the peace of mind knowing that container contents from the previous renter isn't going to cross-contaminate the contents of the current customer and potentially cause liability concerns. You know, E-Tank also provides a one-of-a-kind complete maintenance program for all its rental items, including liquid tight roll-off containers, fluid transfer pumps, and filtration system components. To learn more about the types of containers and pumps E-Tank supplies, check out their website at www.etank.net. So the next time you are faced with an environmentally challenging project, give E-Tank a call to help solve your problem. It's just that easy.
So has there been any, since the last time we talked, has there been any additional exposures to communities that you didn't know about before, or has there increased cancer rates popping up more than you knew before? Anything that's new in the news here for you guys?
For our area, we did find recently a couple of things. So there are fish consumption advisories for PFAS along the river. So that came out last year. Our department, the state health department, issued advisories. These were incredibly health protective, which was essentially telling everyone you can only one fish a year of this particular fish.
One fish a year. You're going to starve to death. More relying on the fish.
From this, you can go and look, and if anyone's curious to find the fish consumption advisories, they are very specific. They looked at a certain species of fish and then how much you could consume before you would potentially see adverse health effects. And so it is a guidance. It's an advisory. You can obviously do whatever you want. That's very difficult for someone who has to make the decision of going hungry versus eating contaminated food. And so that's always a challenge and a really awful environmental justice issue that we need to address. And again, the best way to address it is let's stop it at the source, get PFAS. PFAS does not belong in our environment because there's such a ripple effects attached to it. The other thing that we've seen too with these, aside from the fish consumption advisories, is that we also had a scientist go and try and see if and make sure that they were finding all of the PFAS in the river. And it turned out that they detected some newly discovered PFAS that we did not know about 6 years ago. And so that's interesting that we're finding that when you go look for something, you find it situation. But in this case, what it's showing is that there really needs to be a testing process to look for PFAS as a class. Right now, the testing process is to look for PFAS that we would know exist, creating a standard for them. And here, the scientists went and did a new test method to try and see, okay, we don't know exactly what we're looking for, but we know there's something here. Let's see if we can really quantify what all is here. Mm. And that's what her lab was able to do. And so that was interesting. As far as health effects go, there's still ongoing work being done with the GenX exposure study. My family participated in the GenX exposure study and we got our results back. And that was really shocking. We have high levels of PFAS in our blood. It's in my children's blood, my husband, my blood. Nearly almost half of the PFAS in my blood are Chemours specific chemicals. PFOA is also in my blood at very high levels above the national average. And we know that facility made PFOA for a period of time before they voluntarily phased it out. And so it's clear that we were exposed. We're trying to figure out what those exposures mean. I'm still regularly hearing of people who are developing rare illnesses. The frustration is being able to understand what those illnesses, if those illnesses are related to the drinking water standard, or not drinking water standards, but to our exposures. And one thing that we are still fighting for, and I think this was the first time I came on to the podcast, is health studies.
Yeah, I was going to say, are they doing any epidemiology studies like they did at Parkersburg and taking blood samples of large groups of people within the community?
No, right now there's no one is voluntarily offering up the money. These studies take a lot of money. And so the frustration is to try and find who's going to pay for these studies. And so what we were working on, we have a group of co-petitioners and we were petitioning the EPA to use its authority under the Toxic Substance Control Act to force Chemours to pay for the testing and get these studies done. Chemours would not conduct the study. They would just be the financer of the study.
Right.
They should be. It is part of their, it should be their responsibility. And so
makes sense.
That petition, the EPA apparently granted it. And then, but when they granted it in name only, they only granted 3% of the studies we requested. And that did not include a human epidemiological study like the one done in Parkersburg. So we litigated and last February, it was put before a federal court judge and the judge dismissed our lawsuit. And so we are appealing. And the judge dismissed the lawsuit basically by saying, I don't have any jurisdiction over this matter, which we think was a really unfortunate interpretation of the law. And we think it has a detrimental effect for any community that wants to try and petition the federal government to act on its behalf.
Yeah, if he doesn't have jurisdiction, who does?
Apparently, the federal government has, the courts have jurisdiction where they choose to have jurisdiction if we look at other high-profile litigation that's been happening across the country. I will say that right now, we're hoping to have a favorable outcome in our appeal. And if we win our appeal, then our lawsuit goes back to court. And then we can really start talking about whether the petition was granted or not. And so that's where that is, that's at. So it's been a real big struggle to get a study done. And while all this is happening, people are still getting sick. But can we articulate that there's cancer clusters happening in the area? I think there was the Daily Mail did an article last year, and they had some really interesting information about where they saw high elevated cancers in our area. And we just feel like we need more of that information.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you do, to make more, basically to connect the dots and have more proof.
And that's where they keep getting back to the United Nations. That was also one of the really big things that the United Nations said in their press statements is that they said health and environmental regulators in the U.S. have fallen short of their duty to protect us, especially against our ability to access necessary information that could prevent harm and seek reparations. And that information to prevent harm, those are health studies. Without those health studies, we can't go to our doctor and talk to our doctor about, okay, I know I was exposed. So what's some preventative care that we should be doing right now? Should I be altering my diet to protect my liver? Should I be altering my diet to protect what should I be doing for my lungs and for my kidneys and my heart? All of those organs that are seeming to be impacted by PFAS, our immune system being another one. Like, we have friends who have recurrent cancers, rare cancers. So should we be considering some different immunotherapies when it's time to treat someone with cancer? These things we can't talk about right now because we don't have access to that information.
I wonder if any big pharma is doing studies on this to really see if there's ways to treat this kind of exposure.
You think it would be in big pharma's best interest to do the study so they could help inform where they should do their research? But I'm not into the pharma industry, so I really can't speak for them. But it's an interesting question.
Yeah. Emily, so what is it like being the co-founder and director of Clean Cape Fear? What's it like in the day-to-day job, volunteer? Because this is all volunteer work for you, I know. So tell me, what's it like?
Oh, it's absolutely glamorous. It's a ton of emails. It's a passion project, and you 100% have to have the passion for this work. And it really is, I look at it like it's ministry work. I work at a church, and I was a youth director at the time that Clean Cape Fear formed, and it was formed out of this spiritual necessity because I saw so many children in my youth program, their parents were struggling with serious health effects in my neighborhood, serious health effects. And so really, this is a labor of love project, but it's also, you know, it's getting on the phone, it's talking to the right people, it's understanding and unlocking who's responsible for what, and then going to the next level of responsibility to just talk to anybody and tell them our story and hope that the right people are hearing that message and it's resonating with them, and that the people that are in charge, the decision makers, are being held accountable. And so we focus a lot of that. And so it's a lot of phone calls, it's a lot of meetings, it's a lot of talking and communicating, but at the end of the day, in uniting our community. And that's the one thing that we've noticed over the years is that we may be divided as a nation and sometimes we may be divided as a community, but wow, this is the one area where we are 100% united. Absolutely nobody likes Chemours and DuPont in our community, and we can all rally around that.
It does sound like it's a labor of love, and you're caring for people. There's a spiritual component to it as well, I can tell. And I'm glad to see that you guys are really fighting the good fight there for your community. And what I can see is that the effort you're putting in, it's paying dividends.
Thank you. That's the goal. The goal is that this isn't for nothing, that what we're doing matters and is having an impact. And I hope it is.
Oh, yeah, I think it totally is. And I appreciate all the work you are doing there in the Cape Fear watershed and for all the surrounding communities and the people affected by exposure, that I'm hoping they're appreciative of all the work you guys are doing. And it's not just Clean Cape Fear, too. There are other nonprofit organizations also coming alongside of you, working hard to try to make an impact in this area too. And I know there's a lot there that's happening. And
I'm so glad you mentioned that. Yeah, this is a team effort. This is not just Clean Cape Fear out on its own doing this. No, part of our initiative is building coalitions and alliances and getting partners to work together and to work on our behalf and just getting the systems that are already there to really focus on PFAS and focus on this issue. And that's been our main focus this whole time. So we're completely grateful for all of our partners, all of our allies. Couldn't do this alone.
If there's one thing that the listeners could do to help you and Clean Cape Fear, what would it be?
Oh gosh, like this immediate need. We always tell people, go, if you're the type of person that just likes making donations, then 100% go to Cape Fear River Watch. That is our local riverkeeper organization. And you can make a donation on our behalf to that organization. They do phenomenal work to try and keep the river clean of so many things, including PFAS. Center for Environmental Health is another one that's been fighting the good fight for us on health studies. And you can go, we actually have a fund that's set up specifically for the health studies that we've been trying to get and our TSCA litigation for those health studies. And so you can go and support that work. And then if you're the person that just likes to act, you can go to our website and we have a section, a take action section, and you can support any of our ongoing petitions and our letter writing campaigns to make your voice heard, join your voice with our voice. And that's when we can really move mountains together.
Yeah, that's great. No, that's good. And follow you guys on social media. I think you guys have an Instagram site, a Facebook site, and I think you also have a LinkedIn site.
Yep. And we're on X, Twitter. And so, yeah, please follow along for the latest and greatest.
All right. Emily, thank you for coming on to the show today. Really appreciate the update and all the good work you're doing there. And keep it up and let us know if there's anything we can do for you. we're happy to get this out to the audience and expose more of the what's going on in the Clean Cape Fear area.
Awesome. Thank you.
All right. I appreciate it.
I want to thank our guest, Emily Donovan, for coming on the show today. If you want to learn more about Clean Cape Fear and the work Emily's doing, you can go to www.cleancapefear.org. You can also connect with her via Facebook or Twitter at Clean Cape Fear. We'll also put a link to her contact information on my website. To listen to future Environmental Transformation podcasts, you can check us out on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and other podcast networks, or from my website at www.seankgrady.com. And you can also follow me on Instagram or the Environmental Transformation Podcast Facebook page. If you enjoyed the podcast episode, don't forget to subscribe and tell your friends. We'd also love to hear feedback from the ET Nation about this episode and any future podcast topics you'd like me to cover. Well, thanks for listening, and until next time, make a positive impact in someone's life today.